to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. This episode is brought to you by Carol L. Campos Coaching. Why coach with me when there are so many coaches out there? I do things differently. I don't jump right into your goal. Why? Well, what I've learned is that the subconscious mind is running 90% of the show. That's where we start. We clear any emotional blocks and limiting beliefs first, making sure you know your why and are aligned with where you're headed before tackling your goal. Whether you want to change careers or simply want more joy in your life, I can teach you strategies to help you gain the clarity needed to go where your heart is calling. To get started, I invite you to sign up for a free discovery session at carollcampos.com. Together, let's light your path. Hi, everybody. This is Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Today, we're talking with mindfulness expert Shelly Brown. But Shelly isn't your average mindfulness expert. She has this cool, edgy, and fun rock star energy. Shelly was a national and regional sales professional for over 25 years, working in both the public and private sectors. So she was jet-setting all around the country, meeting with Fortune 500 C-suite executives, and was a top performer herself. She was also an athlete, participating in 25 marathons, 6 ultra-marathons, and countless half-marathons. But then about 6 years ago, everything changed. Shelly suffered a serious spinal injury that turned everything upside down. She was in a constant state of anxiety. And after she recovered and went back to work, she was still feeling this anxiety and couldn't shake it until she learned the practice of mindfulness. Now, we've all heard this term, but according to Shelly, it might not be what you think. I connected with Shelly about 6 months ago, and although we've never met in person, we felt an instant connection. On the one hand, getting nostalgic and laughing about our old toys or middle school memories. And on the other hand, having these really deep conversations. And I knew we had to have her on the show. So without further ado, welcome Shelly Brown.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for that beautiful introduction, Carol. My heart is just bursting.
Well, we are so happy to have you here. So it sounds like you were always a super high achiever. Were you like that as a kid? Where did that come from?
Gosh, I was always very, very high energy and had a pretty perfectionist father and a pretty achievement-oriented mother. And so there was always a push for me to be more, do more, and keep pushing towards excellence. So that's where it came from my folks.
Oh, wow. I read when I was reading about you and even just reading the intro again, I just thought, oh my God, that just makes me tired. How did you do it? Because I like cocooning myself and, you know, you jet setting everywhere and having this energy. I've always wanted that, you know, to be able to just kind of bottle that for when I needed it.
I have always just had this really, really high energy and it's served me really well in so many ways. And it's also kind of not served me really well. That high energy can turn into stress energy very easily. And that's kind of what happened with me for sure.
Yeah.
The physical fitness aspect must have helped a bit with that. Although I can't imagine running marathons. That's just more stamina than I have.
Well, I don't know if I've ever said this on a podcast before, but I had been a smoker.
Wow.
I know. And my father and mother had been as well. And they had stopped. And my father actually started running marathons. And he hid a pack of cigarettes under a rock and would like run the block, started out running the block. And I actually quit smoking because I got a job offer in California and I knew I had to go out there for 3 weeks to train. And I thought, nobody smokes in California. So I go out to San Francisco and my immediate manager was like going in his car to smoke cigarettes, but I had quit smoking and had decided the day that I quit smoking that I was going to run a marathon. And a year and 3 days later, I ran my first marathon. So it was partly to get daddy approval.
Yeah.
Because it was a good goal after quitting smoking.
That's great. I have a funny quitting smoking story as well, although I did not run a marathon a year later. I had this intense, I was a teenager. I started smoking when I was a teenager and I, late teens, probably early 20s, I had this huge crush on a coworker who thought smoking was gross. So of course I had to quit smoking because he was going to be my husband someday. Right? And so I did quit smoking and don't you know he started. And to this day, although I don't know because we've lost touch, but as far as I know he's still a smoker. So I thank him for that. And maybe that was the whole purpose of the crush, I don't know, but I have not smoked since I was probably 20, so that's all a good thing.
That's amazing. I will share really, really quickly that my first 5K, I met my ex-husband and I asked him to bring my cigarettes and I walked down the street with a race bib, a cup of coffee, and a cigarette in my hand.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Oh, isn't it funny what we do for our vices? So in the intro, Carol mentioned that you have said that mindfulness is not what you think. Tell us what mindfulness is to you and how it became such an important tool in your life.
Thank you. So a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about mindfulness. They think that it's weird or woo-woo or mystical or that you're supposed to clear your mind and that meditation and mindfulness are the same thing. And to me, mindfulness is really be here now. So it's really attention training. It's really awareness training. It's noticing what you're thinking and a lot of times just coming back to the present moment. So the formal practice of mindfulness is meditation. And it literally, to me, is the brain training. So in mindful meditation, oftentimes we're using the breath as the object of our awareness. And when we notice that our mind has wandered from that object, we can, with kindness and gentleness and without judgment, bring our mind, make that mindful choice to come back to that object of our awareness. And so the informal practice, which is our daily lives, is really staying present for what is, noticing when our minds wander, because they will, because we're alive and we have 60,000 thoughts a day. And it's coming back again and again to the present moment. And it became extremely important to me because when I suffered that spinal injury, it literally threw me into that fight or flight response. And that is a little bit different than just kind of general anxiety. When you're in that fight or flight response, it's like your wires get crossed and everything comes through your brain like it's a real threat. So it was constant worry, constant anxiety, complete insomnia, and almost like in this state of panic. And when you're in that state of panic all the time, it can really, really lower your immune system and certainly be so detrimental to your well-being. And as Carol had stated, I ended up having a spinal surgery, a successful spinal surgery. But when I went back into the work world, my wires were still crossed and I couldn't talk myself out of this constant state of internal stress. I mean, I was literally shaking all the time, and that was from the adrenaline, and I had no idea. So really understanding that it wasn't just a cognitive thing, that it was really physiological, was the game changer for me to understand that with mindfulness, my wires could actually be reset.
That makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is because we've had a few guests who've talked about mindfulness, but I think you approach it from a different way. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So again, a lot of people, when they hear the word mindfulness or they hear the word meditation, they think that you have to sit in lotus position with your thumb and your middle finger together and say om. I mean, I actually live with somebody who thinks I say om, and I never say om unless he was, and there's nothing wrong with saying om, and there's nothing wrong with sitting in lotus position, and there's nothing wrong with whatever approach you want to take. However, my approach, especially in the work that I do, is to make this as inclusive and accessible to everyone as I possibly can. So that even the skeptic, even the, you know, 25-year-old dude who's way too cool to meditate, maybe my approach will make it more accessible. And I don't care what you call it. Call it awareness training, noticing training, brain training, attention training. You don't have to call it meditation. But the formal practice is very important because it is that mental gym. It is that mental workout. And that part is super, super important. But my approach to help people understand what it is, I actually use rock music. And what I do with it is I invite people to pay attention to a specific instrument in a song. Notice when their mind is drifting, whether it's because of a different instrument, or whether it's because they're thinking this is crazy, or whether it's because their hunger pains are starting, but to keep on coming back to that specific instrument. And that I think is really accessible to most people, to be able to listen to music and do that. And I think it's the same effect, right? Because you're noticing when your mind is drifted and you keep on coming back to that specific instrument. So that's how I help make it more inclusive and approachable to people.
It's interesting that you do that with rock music. I've done that in the past and actually had a professor in college that had us do that with classical music. Mm-hmm. To just follow one instrument. And then his point wasn't so much from a meditation perspective. His point was more about seeing how the themes repeat throughout a piece of classical music. But I noticed when I did it, it would take you there to that meditative state.
Yeah, and everything becomes background, right? So like if you're paying attention to the piano, for instance, and you're uber focused, just like this piano gets really big and everything background. And that's like real life. It's the conversation you're having. And there could be birds chirping outside. You know, there could be your cat rolling up against your leg or whatever it is, but those things become background because you're focused on the present. It's the same for mindful listening. It's the same for anything that you're doing in the present moment. Distractions are going to be inevitable, right? And then also distractions of suffering. There may be sadness, there may be anger, there may be other different kinds of suffering. We can hold them. We can hold space for those things, but they don't become all that we are. And I know it just kind of drifted off into a different conversation because part of the biggest part of why we practice mindfulness is to reduce our suffering. And when I talk about suffering, I'm not talking about a broken arm or a broken leg. I'm talking about the fear about the future, the worrying, and then the regret and the remorse about the past, or numbing out, drinking too much, eating too much, scrolling through Instagram and Facebook and all the ways that we don't deal with reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I love that you're taking this to the workplace because it's so needed. There's so many toxic environments. There's, you know, like you said, just worry. And to me, this is such a heart-centered practice. I mean, you don't have to come out and say it that way, but to me, it really does calm you down. It helps you make better decisions. It helps you bring you into an alignment. So I was wondering, how do people react to you when you go into the workplace? Are most people kind of surprised, a little nervous? Is it all over the map?
That's a great question. And I think a lot of us come to the practice of mindfulness to become calm, but we don't practice mindfulness for ourselves. We practice mindfulness so that we can show up better for others. Otherwise, who really, you know, who really cares? Okay, I'm really calm. But if it doesn't help you to show up better for others, it doesn't really matter. And I think the heart-centered part of it for me came later. I really wanted to figure out how not to lose my, you know what?
Yeah.
But then because you stop losing your, you know what, you actually become so much more present to the compassion and the self-compassion components. And also that becoming much more self-aware, standing in alignment with your own values. So what I bring to the workplace is certainly some practices that people can use to help cultivate that calm, but more importantly, the awareness of how we show up together. So the way that I position mindfulness in the workplace is starting out with rock music to help people understand what it is. But then it's, how does this help us become more self-aware? And how does this help us show up better together? And right now, my focus is actually on helping virtual teams with mindfulness practices so that people can actually be more present for their virtual work. But when I do bring workshops to the workplace, it's literally revolving around what are mindfulness practices that we can do together, whether it's how, you know, how do we show up for a meeting? Can we put our device away? Can we start our meeting with a moment of presence, a moment where we gaze down just for a minute to come together in presence, things about mindful listening, mindfulness around making sure that we're not interrupting each other. How can we be more self-aware, more mindful with how we show up together?
Right. Oh, I love that. Well, and I love that you said that it's really for other people, which I kind of knew because I know your content, but I was kind of leading the witness because I wanted the listeners to hear that. So all that's great. And you did just share some tips, but is there anything else you can share with our listeners on how to cultivate a practice of mindfulness at home?
Yes, thanks. So I did mention the formal practice, I think, is very important. And it doesn't mean that you have to sit there in meditation. You can do a walking meditation, even if it's around your apartment, even if you live in a studio, feeling your feet as they touch the floor, feeling the one foot lift and the other foot hit the ground, just noticing that. So making your footsteps the object of your meditation. And you can also meditate standing up, doing a standing meditation where you're feeling grounded, where your feet are touching the ground. So that's some of the formal practice. There's plenty of apps out there where you can do a basic practice. And I would also suggest that if you're just doing this the first time, that maybe start out with 5 minutes and then add on to that, because the hardest thing for people to do is to say, I'm just going to sit here for an hour when they've never done it before. That's definitely kind of setting yourself up for not ever wanting to do it again. The other practices are mindful eating. Eating is something that we all do, but how many of us actually sit down to eat a meal and turn our phones off or sit away from the TV or the computer and just simply think about, where did our food come from? Looking at the colors, using our senses to experience the food, the taste, the actual feeling in our mouth, and the actual feeling of swallowing the food. I mean, there's so many nuances to mindful eating that could really serve not only to help people if you feel like you're eating too much, but also to really experience the enjoyment of food. And then mindful triggers. We're all washing our hands a lot more. So what about being present for the washing of our hands? The feeling of the soap, the feeling of your hands touching each other, the temperature on the water, the sound of the water, and just really taking a minute to sense in to mindfully washing your hands. I also think that journaling, keeping a gratitude list, or maybe a list of what's right now can really serve just to be mindful in this moment. There's lots of different things. And then also, as much as I don't like my phone and I turn off my notifications, there could be an alarm just to set a few times a day to take 4 really deep breaths in a minute, or standing up and dissipating that stress energy, shaking out, just shaking your arms and then shaking your legs. And our stress energy tends to congest in a certain area of the body, whether it's in our chest or in our head. And then just shaking out our bodies can help just dissipate that stress energy. So those are a lot of things that you can do at home.
Yeah, that's great. I've noticed for myself, I have to remind myself to take some deep breaths because I tend to do this shallow breathing. So that's a great idea.
Yeah, and the phone can be really helpful to remember, or just putting post-its around. If you don't want those notifications on the phone, putting a note on the refrigerator where you go if you get your water from the refrigerator, or something that you do often, some activity that you do often to remind you to just be here now and just stop for that moment for a mindful pause.
That's a good tip. So switching gears just a little bit, the world is in need of compassion right now, I think more than ever. But compassion for yourself is extremely important as well. What's the difference between compassion and self-compassion?
So you're so right. And really, a lot of people obviously find it a lot easier to be compassionate for others, but we have a very difficult time feeling self-compassion, practicing self-compassion. And compassion is the connection to all human beings. And when we practice self-compassion, it is a few different things. It is practicing self-kindness versus self-judgment. So a lot of times when I'm feeling overwhelmed, I will actually practice a self-compassion break. And what that entails is allowing myself that moment. This is a moment of suffering, and practicing self-kindness versus self-judgment. Like, what are you feeling sorry for yourself versus, putting my hand on my heart or my arms around myself. This is a moment. This is a moment of suffering. And then also knowing that all human beings suffer. All human beings and millions of people are experiencing these moments of sorrow, of grief, of frustration, of worry, of anger, of any type of suffering that we are experiencing in that moment. And then also the non-identification, the mindfulness versus the non-identification. So instead of "I am sad," it's "I have a feeling of sadness." And that allows us to just hold space for it without becoming it, without making it our identity. And then perhaps, inviting a moment to say, "It's okay," or "I love you," or, wrapping yourself tighter in your own embrace, and then just allowing yourself to let go. And obviously, compassion is holding space for the deep, deep, heart-centered love and caring for all beings, and knowing that we're all in this together as human beings. And there's a practice that I love called loving kindness, and it's a compassionate practice of well wishes for, you start with yourself, then you go to somebody who's really benevolent and caring. Then you go to somebody that perhaps you've never spoken to, but can bring their image to mind, their a sense of them to your mind. And then even maybe somebody that you have a difficult relationship with, and then extending it out to all beings. And there's 4 traditional offerings. It's "May all beings be healthy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings live with ease." But right now, obviously, being more intentional about those wishes and really noticing in your heart space what you want to wish, because not all beings are healthy. So perhaps it's May all beings be as healthy as possible. May all beings have freedom from illness. May all beings who are sick return to health and have as much ease as possible. Because we can't save the world, but we can collectively offer these really, really heartfelt offerings of well wishes to all beings in the world.
Oh, that's beautiful. God, I could listen to you all day. You're just so poetic the way you speak about this. And Shelley, you and I have been on some group calls, and just the demonstration of compassion from people all over the world at this time has been pretty amazing. And I know amazing, it's an overused word, but I'm so happy to see it. It's so needed. You know, you and I had talked, I'm by myself and not having somebody to give you a hug or whatever. Yeah, it's okay to hug yourself. Yeah, it's okay to hug a tree. And I do.
Yeah.
And doing what you need to do to feel love, to take care of yourself. But at the same time, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are there for you.
It's so true. And I think reframing sometimes can be super helpful. This is an act of solidarity versus isolation, you know, versus having to quarantine some people. The suffering is when we think this is a prison, when we think this is forever, when we think this is never going to end, when we think that it's always going to be this way. That's where mindfulness can really help. That's where self-compassion can really help to keep us present and just what I call foreverizing. And then really the compassion piece is, this is an act of solidarity. There's millions and millions of us who are standing separate together.
Yeah.
So that we can protect other people. We are standing in solidarity, even in our social distancing, even in our quarantine. So it is a little bit of a reframe.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Tell everybody a little bit about your current offerings and what's coming up next for you.
Thank you. So I'm doing a lot of webinars right now, and the webinars are really for virtual teams to learn about some of the mindful practices that they can incorporate to possibly mitigate those feelings of isolation, to mitigate some of the feelings of stress. And so I'm doing like 30-minute mindfulness webinars. I've done them for some hospitality industry associations, and that's a really, really hard hit industry as businesses are, but a lot of people are certainly losing their jobs in those industries. So I'm doing webinars for them. And then I'm also doing other webinars for virtual teams. When I do workshops in person, the offerings will be similar to what I've done before. It's how can we be more mindful together? Because I think that even though we came into this quarantine bluntly, it was like, boom, we're all in quarantine. I think coming back to the work world is going to be more of a process. And like most things, having to transition yet again from this back into the work world, I think that there is going to be a lot of need for being able to come back together mindfully again. We will have probably, most of us, learned a lot from this time, but now relearning how to come together with self-awareness and having equanimity at the top of our priorities and engaging together more mindfully is going to be extremely important.
Yeah, I was just going to say your work's going to be needed more than ever at this time.
Yeah, I agree. So Shelley, where can people find you online?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn, and my website is roimindfulness.com, and that's real time observations and insights, not return on investment. roimindfulness.com.
Great. We will put LinkedIn and the website in our show notes so people can find you. And check out the website, everybody. I was looking at it while we were preparing for this interview, and there's just so much great information there. Thank you for sharing all of that information.
My pleasure. And one thing that I will say is that my favorite thing about mindfulness to share is that when we practice, we can really open up to what's called a beginner's mind. It's like seeing the world almost like with childlike eyes, and it can open us up to creativity and innovation, because we don't have any preconceived notions on what's happened before. We don't take the past in with us. So if you are looking to open up more creativity, a greater sense of problem solving and innovation, mindfulness is definitely a pathway to open up new ways of thinking and being.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for mentioning that.
And I think that's important, because I don't think a lot of people realize that. And it is, it's you know, one of the big byproducts of it. And it's kind of magical.
I agree. I've never felt such creativity in my life in terms of writing, in terms of art, and in all kinds of different things, videos and things like that. It's been really joy. I sense into so much more joy than I ever have. And that's my wish for people, to be able to sense into the joy in the moment, even if it's just joy that we can breathe.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you touched on your creativity. We didn't get to talk about that, but I hope people are able to see some of the collages you've made, because they're amazing.
Thank you. And that is all a result of mindfulness. I get to tell story through art and tell story through writing. And it's been such a blessing.
Absolutely. Well, Shelley, thank you so much for being with us today and chatting and sharing all you know about mindfulness and coming at it from a different angle that's really interesting and draws people in.
Thank you so much. And keep on dropping those breadcrumbs that we can all follow and pick up. And even if we want to eat a loaf, we can do that.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. As always, you can catch the show on our website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you're hearing, please just say hi, drop us a quick email or a review, and we love hearing from you. If there's other things you want us to talk about, we love hearing your suggestions, your show ideas. Just send us a quick email and let us know what you'd like to hear. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.